Good afternoon. Welcome to House Judiciary. Senator French, it's such a pleasure to have you with us in attendance at 1:05 past one. Representative Lynn, Representative Coghill, Representative Ramirez, Representative Samuels, Representative Grunberg is here and stepped out and is walking back into the room. Representative Dahlstrom is excused, and we are awaiting Representative Holmes. Senator French, we're delighted to have you with us. We know you have a 1:30, please come up. We know you have a 1:30 commitment on the governor's AGIA plan, so we are delighted to have you take us through Senate Bill 19 and Senate Bill 20. And we have, after we lose you to Senate Judiciary Committee, then we have that would be available to speak on Senate Bill 19 and 20, Brooke Miles and Joyce Anderson by phone, I assume, and Brooke by phone also. So with that, Senator, the floor is yours. It's a pleasure and a privilege to have you here, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. Thank you for making time for these bills today. I know your schedule is packed, and so I won't belabor the point, but I do appreciate your giving us the opportunity to come and show your body a little bit, I guess our body's humble efforts to address these difficult issues. And you may have noticed that we did so through a pair of bills, and we did that to, in essence, make some of the basic distinctions between the executive branch and the legislative branch easier to follow, and the changes in the law easier to follow. So I'll begin, of course, with Senate Bill 19, which is the bill relating to the Executive Branch Act. It is began, like I think most of the bills did, by trying to address the Rehnquist loophole, by trying to address the issue that centered on the problem that arose several years ago when we learned that our Attorney General had an enormous position in the stock, which he was also involved in taking public action with respect to. The subsequent investigation and analyses revealed a weakness in our ethics laws, which needed to be closed. We needed to define better what amount of money a public official can have at stake and still take official action with respect to that investment. And that's, in essence, the heart of the bill, which is Section 3. There are many different and, I think, valid approaches to this issue. We took a fairly straightforward one, which indeed had passed our body in 2004, and that was the lowering of the amount available to $5,000. I mean that was basically the cut we took at it, and that's the numbers you'll see reflected in Section 3 of the bill on page 3. We also tried to clarify the introduction to that section, which has always been very problematic. If you've taken the time to read what's on the books now, you know that the difficulty in defining what's insignificant and separating personal interests from financial interests is one that you can really stumble over. You can really find yourself twisted in a knot trying to figure out what's allowable and what isn't. And so the opening lines of Section 3 on lines 26 on page 2, lines 26 through 31, and on page 3, lines 1 through 4, are in essence the idea of letting the public know that if the action you take has an insignificant effect, it doesn't matter if you have $1 million worth of stock in Microsoft or IBM or a coal company. If the action that you take has no effect on the investment, if it's insignificant. If the action that you take is insignificant, it doesn't matter how much money you have at stake. Vice versa, if the action that you can take action with respect to an investment if the amount that you have is very, very small, under $5,000 according to the terms of this bill. So that's the approach that we took in our body, and that's the basic thrust of the bill. Let me just walk you through the other sections, if I could, briefly, so that the committee has the entirety of the bill in mind while it's looking it up. In Senate Bill 19, Section 1 is a section that was added by the Finance Committee, and it says that a former public official in the executive branch may not lobby for 1 year after leaving service, except as a representational or a volunteer lobbyist. That's our approach to stopping the revolving door between the executive branch and the lobbying ranks. Section 2 repeals the current statute 3952.110b. And I beg your pardon. Section 2 was a floor amendment that we accepted in the Senate, and it just adds the idea that you have to file a final report after you leave public service. I think it's an idea that your committee adopted in a similar form. Yes. Section 3, then, was the discussion that we just had with respect to the allowable financial interests that you can have and still take action, official action, with respect to your ownership. And Section 4 was added at the behest of the Department of Law, and I think they may address that section, but it adds a presumption, and it does so for a couple of good reasons. And I don't know if you guys have discussed this or how much so forgive me for going over material that you plowed thoroughly, mm-hmm. and I'm sure at great length. But the idea was to prevent someone who had $4,500 worth of stock, who takes official action with respect to that stock, who then by that official action bumps the stock value up to, say, $50,000, you know, realizes an enormous return from his official action. It allows the Attorney General to then bring an ethics complaint, or pursue an ethics complaint, if you will. They don't bring them, but they pursue them, an ethics complaint against that individual, even though the value of their stock was less than the prescribed statutory limit. Because of the enormous increase, because of some other extraneous facts or pertinent facts that you may be able to bring forward, you could then pursue an ethics complaint, even though the dollar limit was not exceeded. It sets up the presumption that it's ethical, but that presumption, as we all know, can be rebutted, can be overcome by a good attorney general. So that was an idea that Mr. Jones brought to us. We adopted it, and it seems like a nice nuance or thing to have on the books. Section 5 simply adds other types of lobbying, other types of work that you might do in addition to the ones that were listed on lines 2. We the statute, I'm now on page 4. Lines 1 through 5, and you can see that the statute used to say does not include proposal or consideration of legislative bills, etc. And we decided to include them. We thought it was important to further include those items. Section 6 lists more individuals who can't lobby. We added the section was somewhat convoluted. You can see it used to say service as the governor, lieutenant governor, department head is appropriate in lines 11 and 12. We simply listed them out one at a time, added some other positions. As you can see, we added division directors, legislative liaisons, and so forth. We added legislative liaison, administrative assistants, other employees in the office of the governor, lines 22 through 24. Added members of board or commission that has authority to adopt regulations. That struck us as being a good idea. And I'm sorry.
First, Representative Holmes is here. You say hi to Senator French.
Hello, Senator.
Thank you, Chair.
You're welcome. Representative Samuels has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator French, and I had this as a notation to do when the governor's bill passed through this committee, and I dropped the ball. We were arguing about other things, and now I want to ask the question because the language looks very familiar. Section 5 is 2 years that you can't go and. Lobby on something that you had a hand in. But Section 6 for the governor herself or himself is 1 year, who has a hand in every decision, or a commissioner who has his hand in a lot. Why 2 years for one and 1 year for the other? What was the thinking behind it? I never did ask the governor's office. I never got. So now I've got you.
Through the chair, Representative Samuels, it's a great point. I think the distinction is one you began to make, but let me just flesh it out a little bit more. When an individual works in public service, when they have had a decision on their desk specifically as to that matter, then it just, I think it strikes the public as repugnant to see that person hop over the fence, if you will, and go to work in a capacity where they, you know, sort of enjoy the fruits of that decision, work on the fruits of that decision, and take the fruits of that decision to their advantage, to the bank, if you will. And I think that's it's a matter of public perception and reality that there's been a trade, if you will, on your specific decision-making capacity. With respect to Section 6, you raise a good point. You could say that we hold the decisions of the governor and the lieutenant governor, and I think the governor probably more specifically, at a different level. We see them operating at a different level. We don't see them, you know, with their fingers deep in the regs and deep in the statutes and deep into the programs. We see them operating at a more of a, you know, 20,000 foot level, and it's a policy call that I will leave to your wisdom.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two-part question on that same issue. Looking at Section 5 on the bottom of page 3, it refers to a public officer who leaves state service. Would that public officer also pick up the people who are in Section 6, the governor, lieutenant governor, et cetera? Public officer, I would assume, is broad enough to pick up at least some of those same people.
Through the chair, Representative Holmes, I hate two-part questions.
Okay.
Just kidding.
That's my first question.
I think you're right, and I think you probably hit on something, which is that the same restriction which applies to the public officer in Section 5 applies to the governor as well. That is, the governor would be prohibited from taking a position in a capacity where he or she is trading on the direct decision that they made for 2 years, mm-hmm. whereas they're just blanketedly prohibited mm-hmm. from being a lobbyist for 1 year in any capacity.
If I might, can I?
Yes, and then Representative Broomberg after that. Yes, please.
It's just on this point.
Well, so actually, and that's, I mean, that was my reading of this, is that, and I wanted to make sure I wasn't missing anything with that public officer. I was assuming that they actually both apply to, for instance, the governor and some of these people. And I would read this as saying the difference is Section 5 is talking about matters that were specifically in front of you on the desk. You can't lobby for 2 years because that really looks bad. If you want to lobby on other issues that were, if you were maybe working in, you know, the Department of Natural Resources and you go to lobby on something that was completely outside your purview in your state capacity, maybe we only care that you have a one-year gap because it doesn't look as bad to the public. I mean, that's maybe how I was reading the distinction between those two sections.
Through the chair, Representative Holmes, that strikes me as being a very reasonable interpretation of the statute and the bill.
Representative Grunberg?
Yeah, I'm not sure if this was the question that the former dialogue included, but the term public officer on page 3, line 28, does not include all of the people who are listed in Section 6, on page 4 of the bill. Public officer in AS 3952-965, which is the definition section, includes or means A, a public employee, B, a member of a board or commission, and C, a state officer designated by the governor to act as trustee of the trust, or a person for whom the trust has been delegated trust duties. Trust has the meaning given in 3714-450, which I haven't looked up. But it wouldn't appear to include governor, lieutenant governor, heads or deputy heads of a principal department unless they're trustees. I'm not sure. I don't think whether it would include legislative liaisons, et cetera. I don't think it would. I think those are people who are not public officers. But boards and commissions, they are definitely, seems to me, public officers. And boards and commissions, 7 would be. So some of them would be potentially in a conflict, I think, the boards or commission members. Although I'm not sure, it's very confusing.
Senator, we're an inquisitive group. Representative Cahill has a question. Representative Samuels has a question. I'm not sure, was that a question or an observation?
Well, you know, it was kind of a question. What do you think? This is a leading question. It's a long monologue interrupted by monosyllabic responses.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I think you make a good point about the fact that I guess I would ask the Department of Law. I know Mr. Jones is here. He has an enormous body of knowledge on this topic, particularly when you get into the definitions that are a little bit tricky. Public officer, public official, those are sometimes confusing.
Yeah, he's sitting conveniently close to the door.
On that point, Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm reading the definition section of the 3952 here as well, and it includes all public employees. That appears to me to encompass the governor, lieutenant governor, and
I think we should ask Mr. Jones.
We will after we lose Senator French, who's got his committee in 10 minutes. Representative Samuels?
Thank you.
Or was it Representative Cahill? I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to bring that up. A public employee who works in a particular area can't go out and take employment for advising. It's a little different than lobbying, where I think in Section 6 it's a lobbying-specific prohibition, except for where you're talking about representational or volunteer lobbying. Where you get into Section 5, you're talking about a whole range of other. It could be a special assistant to somebody. It could be paying for advice totally outside of lobbying, where you could be making money on the very issues that you made policy on, just wrote regulations on just a year before. So put a two-year window there. And I think so for the lobbying, if I remember the discussion correctly, was specifically as a registered lobbyist, where this is a whole much broader issue.
Representative Samuel?
Thank you. Sooner or later we'll get to a question for you. Right. I'm going to give an example here. I'm going to use poor Ms. Hay, who's here on another bill. She is a legislative liaison with the Department of Environmental Conservation. So she would be under Section 6 and could become a lobbyist on any subject after 1 year, even on subjects which she has had a hand in, even on environmental issues, you know, become a lobbyist for one side or another, a wastewater issue of some kind. Under Section 6, but then she would go then to Section 5 and go, I'm also a public officer, and now she has to wait 2 years, so she could become a lobbyist for anything except DEC issues. She'd have to wait 1 year, and then she has to wait 2 years to go back to being a DEC lobbyist, or something to do with the environmental. I hate to point out names, but it makes it way easier for me to their
concrete.
Mr. Bitney is the legislative liaison for all departments. So he's automatically under the two-year, that position. Anybody who's in that position would be under the two-year time frame because they have a hand in all departments. Would that the way that you would try to clarify who can do what after the time frame here?
Through the chair, Representative Samuels, Mr. Bitney's probably the hardest example to analyze. Anybody else, you can sort of you can identify concretely what it is they do in their day-to-day business. When you work in all businesses, you know, the question would be, has he participated personally and substantially through the exercise of personal of official action? On most bills, I guess you could probably say yes. He visited this office, he, twisted my arm, or he made this great argument, and so forth.
Anything quickly? Because you could, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll try to be quick. I wanted to make the point is if you want people to take the job that Mr. Bitney took, in order to do that job well, you must be familiar with the process. You have to be familiar with the legislative process, how it works, how to maneuver your way through this, that, and how the committee process works, to a certain extent the personalities involved, and all of this. Are you going to find it tougher to get people to take that job or Ms. Hay's job if you say now there's a two-year window on going out, a new governor comes in, you're going to lose your job, you get fired. That's just a given. And now, would I take that job knowing that, let's say, there's 2 years left in administration, I'm going to quit the job I have, I'm going to go take that job knowing I'm going to get fired in 2 years, and know I have to wait 2 years after that before I can make a living doing the only thing I really know how to do? is state government. I mean, if that's what you've spent your career in this building, and you do a good job and you're a fine public servant and not throwing rocks at any individual. I mean, a lot of individuals have had that job, and they have that job because they do a good job at it, because they know the process. And now we're saying 2 years to make a living. It's just a point I'd like to discuss on later in the process. I realize you have 4 minutes.
Yes, and so I was going to, if you could give us a quick response, and then if you could just give us a macro view on Senate Bill 20 before you have to go with the committee, we'd appreciate that.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Samuels. You know, I know you have wrestled with these topics like we wrestled with them, and there's no right answer. I mean, there just isn't. You just have to find some balance point where you're satisfied that you're protecting the public good vis-a-vis, you know, the demands of public service and the requirement that you get qualified individuals to fill positions. I wish I could tell you there's a bright line. And my default response is, if you're called to public service, you're called to public service. And there's a reason why you're called, and there's a reason why you want to do it, and it involves sacrifice. It honestly does. The person that you mentioned, I believe, could probably find lots of valuable work in that profession, whether it's DEC or some other related field. They just can't come to the building and use that influence they gained and push pieces of legislation. They can write laws. They can draft laws. They can analyze laws. They can work in the office. They can go to trade groups. They can promote all kinds of agendas without being a lobbyist. I think that's the special point of influence that the public is concerned about. But thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
With your indulgence, Chair Emerson, I'll just briefly introduce SB 20, which fortunately is the shorter and the probably the simpler of the two bills. I think you've allocated the time wisely. Senate Bill 20 is about legislative disclosures. The idea is to inform the public more concretely, more specifically, and with all due respect, more of a burden on ourselves. We should be, I think, aware of the burdens we're putting on ourselves through a measure like this or a measure similar to disclose to the public what it is we do in exchange for the money we earn outside the building. That's the basic thrust of the bill. The heart of the bill is contained in Section 3. And we have, in essence, lowered the level of disclosure to $1,000, which is consistent with the recent Citizens Initiative. And we've added on lines 21, 22, and 23 a sufficient description to make clear of a person of ordinary understanding the specific services performed. The next line is the approximate total number of hours that have been spent or will be spent. And finally, the amount of income received and the amount of income deferred from the source if the recipient is an income of the income as a legislative director. So that's the meat and the potatoes, the heart and the soul of the bill. There's some other provisions dealing with your last report and so forth, I think similar to the approach that
Representative Cockrell, then I have a question for you.
Yeah, and I guess the question is, first of all, you're aware that this 246200 was an initiative that just passed.
Yes.
And so you have no problem making some significant changes to an initiative then.
In my view, this initiative makes is more burdensome, not less burdensome. And in that respect, I think it's a defensible amendment.
I think we've all agreed that the initiative process is amendable, and I wanted to bring it to your attention. And it is true that much of it is more burdensome, but much of it is substantively different too. So, in that there the different types of income to report it, things like that. So, I mean, we passed it out here too, but I wanted to bring it up as a matter of point that we're talking about it a lot in this building on a whole range of different things.
I appreciate the point. It's a good one.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Cockrell. Senator French, here's my question, philosophical, more nature, but rooted in 20. We had extensive discussions here about the difference between prohibition and disclosure, whether it was adequate to disclose activities or whether it was necessary to insert actual prohibitions. I don't know if it's addressed in the bill, but if you could just give us a summary of how it was addressed and treated philosophically in committee, trying to draw that bright line in the way that we manage our own behavior and affairs.
Chair Ramirez, we actually are working on a third measure that deals with that issue specifically. It was a bill introduced by Senator Gary Stevens, who took the initial position that all consulting work should be banned. And as we mulled that over and considered perhaps a more refined approach to it, we came up with language that I think has been bandied about in this House as well, with respect to not being able to trade on your status, not doing work, not being paid for work, in essence, that mirrors the work you do as a legislator, to not push legislation, to not write legislation, to not do things that ultimately are just like you being a legislator, that trade on that status.
What about attorneys doing legal work that involves state agencies? What about furniture makers that aren't in the retail business, but they aren't in the wholesale business? What about liquor licensees that have to call the alcohol board? What about people who work in the airlines that have to, I mean, we ran into many, many brick walls and barbed wire fences and
we threw the baby out with the bathwater.
And then we threw the baby out with the bathwater. So for what it's worth, that was an area where we couldn't figure anything out.
My goodness, Mr. Chairman, look at the time.
Senator French, what a privilege to have you here.
My pleasure, and I sincerely do appreciate your taking time to take up these matters. There's no pride of authorship in the Senate. We will we submit ourselves to your wisdom, and with that, I thank you for your time this afternoon,
sir. Thank you very much. With that, while we're still just bandying this about, if we can just take just a few more minutes, Joyce Anderson is available, and so is Brooke Miles and Mr. Jones. Representative Gruenberg has left Mr. Jones, otherwise he would have had you up here for a while. Does anybody have any questions for Joyce or for Brooke Miles relative to Senate Bill 19 or 20? All right.
Mr. Chairman, I think that there are a couple of questions, and I think they're based on the what-if scenarios, but I'm going to do some chasing down. But it has to do with the Section 5 and 6 that we're dealing with. And just to give them a heads up, the comment that I'm going to make and a question that I'm going to probably pose along the way, but I'm going to do some studying to see what we did in the other bill before I pose a question. Okay. And that is... When a public servant leaves public office, if you have a state employee who's not an exempt state employee and they worked on building regulations, they're not going to be able to go out and get compensation. They're not even going to be able to assist in consideration before the administration on it. So it's a very serious thing. It goes right to the same question you were asking about what can we do as legislators. Do we have a strict prohibition or not? And so if we bring this back up, I will probably bring an amendment up with that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Are there other comments on 19 or 20?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sanders.
Thank you. On 19, I would disagree with one thing that Senator French said, is you just couldn't come to the building. But the way that Section 5 is structured, for 2 years, you couldn't even advise. So mm-hmm. you're done. Mm-hmm. You can't really go in to do anything. So,
and that would go to Mr. Chairman.
If you look at a public officer, if it's a public employee, I'm gonna look out here and see all the ex-staff people who would become unemployable, and it's an interesting question. I understand that the point of it, but it have some ramifications. If you have to wait 2 years before you can earn a living, you'd think long and hard before you would take the first step. Or knowing that you cannot take the second step for two years, if you have a family, what are you going to do? Change your entire career.
Yeah, I'll pass.